Hello to everyone on the U2 America Network and on Biz Talk Radio. Welcome to America Trends. I'm your host, Amy Fuller. We are talking tonight about anxiety and what to do when we need to face our fears. How to just let it go with our friend of the show, Dr. Michael Mantel. He is the author of The Link is What You Think and also Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. P.S. It's all small stuff. And he's also going to talk about the mob mentality that followed the news of the Covington Catholic kids after that man, Nathan Phillips, got into their faces at a march last weekend. Also tonight, Undersecretary to President George W. Bush, Bart Markois, with the political headlines of the day. He is a writer for Ops Lens, and we always appreciate his coming on and talking about everything that's going on. And in the news, a big announcement from President Trump from the Rose Garden that he will be reopening the government after that 35-day partial shutdown. He'll be reopening it, if even only temporarily. The proposal would open the government for 3 weeks while talks continue on the funding for a border wall. But Trump says if we don't get a fair deal from Congress, the government will either shut down again on February 15th or he will use an executive order.
So let me be very clear. We really have no choice but to build a powerful wall or steel barrier. If we don't get a fair deal from Congress, the government will either shut down on February 15th again, or I will use the powers afforded to me under the laws and the Constitution of the United States to address this emergency. We will have great security. And I want to thank you all very much. Thank you very much.
Meanwhile, the Federal Aviation Administration says it will be augmenting staffing and rerouting traffic, or it spent today doing that, due to an increase in sick leave at two major airports, New York's LaGuardia and in Philadelphia. They had to sort of close them down for a time. Halting flights. Those incidents reportedly did play into the deal to end the shutdown. People on both sides of the political spectrum sounded off on Twitter saying it's Trump's fault. Others saying, why are Democrats so afraid of a wall? Speaking of fear, they're saying don't watch it alone. The Ted Bundy tapes, a new offering by Netflix. This is a four-part docuseries just in time for the 30th anniversary of the serial killer's execution. He was executed in 1989 for the murder of two sorority sisters at Florida State University. He was 42, having committed the last of his crimes at age 31. Here is a look at the Ted Bundy tapes.
He didn't look like anybody's notion of somebody who would tear apart young girls.
My name is Ted Bundy.
I've never spoken to anybody about this. I am looking for an opportunity to tell the story as best I can.
A person of this type chooses his victim for a reason. Possession, control, violence.
There was something unique about Ted's brain. He talked in terms of a voice in his head, and this voice would start saying things about women.
He had very blue eyes. When he really got going, his eyes went absolutely black.
Murder leaving a person of this type hungry, unfulfilled, would also leave him with the obviously irrational belief that that the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. And the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. Or the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled.
Theodore Bundy has escaped, suspected of dozens of sex killings in Washington State, Idaho, Utah, and Colorado.
I think things are going to work out. That's about all I can say.
Bundy is acting as his own lawyer.
What is unusual to see is that many of the onlookers are women.
Are you a little scared when you look at him?
He just doesn't look like the type to kill somebody.
Serial killer Theodore Bundy has escaped once again.
One of the FBI's most wanted men.
He was charming, good-looking, smart.
Are you sure you have the right guy?
I mean, I'm not an animal, I'm not crazy, I'm on a split personality.
Welcome Welcome back to America Trends on the YouTube America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. In just a little while, we're going to talk to the author of The Link Is What You Think and Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, P.S. It's All Small Stuff, about anxiety and how to overcome it. Also, the groupthink that's been so pervasive on social media, the social media mob mentality of sorts after that Covington Catholic incident last weekend. So that is all ahead tonight. I'm your host, Amy Fuller. Glad to be here. We are joined right now by Bart Marcois. And he is, well, he's a lot of things, but he's also a writer here with Ops Lens. And so if you take a look at that, you can always catch up on his articles. He was an undersecretary for President George W. Bush and, career diplomat. And we're always so glad to have his expertise here on America Trends. Bart, welcome back.
Thanks, Amy. It's always great to be on with your network and your show. Thank you.
We appreciate it. So we do have our new audience of Biz Talk Radio all over the world, several new countries. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your pedigree and tell us a little bit about your career trajectory and all you've done, because it's been so much.
Oh, I'd be delighted. It's always fun to share. You know, I used to call myself the accidental Arabist. I became a State Department Arabist. I joined the State Department in the 1980s. I was a cold warrior, and I joined to fight the Soviets and keep godless communism from your doorstep. And then the Berlin Wall fell, and I thought, well, I'll try the Middle East. That's a new area. And I took a few years of Arabic training and went served in Jordan, Yemen, Tunisia and Kuwait, and came back, did some Washington assignments, and then took retirement and got involved in American politics. It started out as a hobby. I'd lived overseas without television for so long. I came back and saw people watching TV for 3 or 4 hours a night, and I thought, I could do something else. And I started doing political work, and before I knew it, I'd gotten involved in the George W. Bush campaign, and he invited me to serve in his administration. So I went back in the government as a principal deputy assistant secretary, and I worked at the Energy Department. I was in charge of policy and international affairs, and it was kind of fun. I came back in, and I outranked all my former ambassadors, and that was always nice.
How about that? So about what era was it? We know George W. Bush. What years were you there?
I was there 2003 and 2004 and 2002 to 2004. And I got out and worked on the reelection. And then I did some private banking, investment banking. And then now I'm a federal contractor working on energy policy. It's a lot of fun.
And keeping us up to date on all the things going on with the political headlines. And boy, did we have some today. It started out with, the government shutdown over for now. President Trump, it's like 35 days or so, the partial government shutdown, the longest ever. And they sort of reached an agreement. And a lot of people are saying Trump caved. Other people are saying maybe he'll just do the State of the Union and make a big announcement then. What do you think of all this?
Yeah, Trump doesn't cave. Ann Coulter can relax. We voted for Trump, and we got Trump. We did not get Jeb. He is, going back to my Foreign Service career, the first shutdown, I was a diplomat in Kuwait, and we were told, you're all essential, you'll come to work. But we were given specific instruction, word for word from Washington, through our ambassador. He said, you are not to do anything that would help any American citizen during the shutdown. Our instructions are three words, make it hurt. We want American citizens to hurt during the shutdown. This was the Clinton administration, their official instructions to their senior administration officials, because they said, Newt Gingrich and the Republicans are making as if government doesn't matter. We want to teach American voters a lesson. And that's what Democrats have been doing with shutdowns ever since. Trump has taken a different tack. He's kept everything open that he could keep open. Remember, Obama closed the national parks. He spent money and time to put up fencing around the World War II memorial, which, if you've never been to Washington, it's an open memorial. You can walk to it at 3 o'clock in the morning. and walk around. It's just out there on the grass, and you can walk up to it and walk through it. But they put fencing around it, tied it with wire, so that the World War II veterans could not get into it. They wanted to make it hurt. Trump is trying to make it have a lesser impact on everybody, the least impact possible. Now federal workers are missing their second paycheck, and he's saying, yeah, let's open up for 3 weeks, give them their back pay, let them save their money for a little bit. They've got 3 weeks now to kind of re-regulate their affairs, and now let's fight again, and let's settle. He is not going to stop until he gets the funding for the wall and to protect the border. There's no question he will protect our border.
And he did say that they'll get the paychecks out as quickly as possible. And you know, he means it. He's doing this for free. He donates his paycheck. Talks will continue on the funding for a border wall. And again, as you mentioned, if they don't come to an agreement by February 15th, he says he'll close it down again. Talking to Bart Marcois, former undersecretary for President George W. Bush. Some other big news from this morning, Roger Stone, advisor and longtime friend of President Trump, awakens to have his whole family jolted by the FBI banging on his door, and he was under arrest. And boy, what a spectacle they made. And even a CNN reporter camping out there waiting, wonder how he knew.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a contrast. I laugh at it because it's so ludicrous, but it's really very, very frightening. 29 federal agents in 19 vehicles to come and break down the door or bang on the door of a man who would have turned himself in at the federal courthouse. All they had to do is say to the lawyer, show up at 3 o'clock this afternoon and turn yourself in for a hearing. But they wanted to make a spectacle. CNN was obviously tipped off. Not because not only were they there.
I don't know, Bart. The reporter said he just had a gut feeling. So apparently he's got a very strong gut.
Yeah. And his gut feeling came because he saw unusual grand jury activity yesterday. How is he seeing grand jury activity? That's supposed to be more secret even than the Mueller probe.
Hey, Bart, let's put a pause in. I want to hold you over till after the break. I have a hard break coming up. Is that okay?
Yes, ma'am.
We'll tell you what charges Roger Stone was indicted on and what happened after that. It involves President Nixon. Back after this. Back to America, friends. So glad to have you with us for the hour. We've been talking with Bart Marcois and Roger Stone, a longtime associate of President Trump and friend, perhaps his first advisor, some people are saying. You know, in recent days, well, he's been saying all along, I'm not going to bear false witness against President Trump and in this whole Mueller probe thing. And now they've gone and arrested him. He is charged with witness tampering, obstruction, and making false statements. And they went the FBI to his home overnight. And Bart, as you said a few moments back, he would have turned himself in. And, you know, they've got people like him and Jerome Corsi just sort of waiting around going, when's my time going to be?
Exactly. And it's kind of frightening if you compare this to what happened to Hillary Clinton's co-conspirators in destroying her emails and hiding the evidence of her lax security procedures in handling classified materials. There, Peter Stroke, who headed that, he was the agent in charge of that team, not only allowed them to keep their electronic communications, he allowed them to come in and speak to the FBI, not under oath. They came in, the FBI went to them in their offices, in their place of work. They all got to be there together, so there was no prisoner's jeopardy, prisoner's dilemma, no guessing of what the other person would say. They got their story straight. They were not asked to testify under oath. They were just asked to have a pleasant conversation, and they were all granted immunity. Cheryl Mills, what's her name, Beth Wilkinson, Huma Abedin, all granted immunity. And then they were allowed to destroy the evidence, take all their electronic gear and destroy it. How can you have two standards of legal jeopardy, two standards of legal treatment, depending on a political party. It's frightening to see the federal law enforcement authority twisted and perverted in that way.
Just that whole Clinton machine. Roger Stone, a confidant of Donald Trump. This all has to do with the pursuit, his alleged pursuit of Russian hacked emails damaging to Hillary Clinton's campaign in her 2016 election bid. The prosecutors allege that senior Trump campaign officials sought to leverage the publication of the stolen material into a White House victory. And so in Fort Lauderdale today, Roger Stone was released on bail. And it was trending all day because he threw his hands up in the air a la Richard Nixon. You don't have me to kick around anymore, whatever it was. And so that was trending. And then also I guess Roger Stone has this huge tattoo of Richard. There it is. apparently he's got, apparently it's his thing. But he did that out on the steps as well. And apparently he's got this tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back that he has shown off more than once, Bart.
Yeah. Yeah. He loves that. And I got to say, he's, how old is he? 70, 75?
He's 66 years old, Roger Stone.
66. Well, I hope to look that good when I'm 66. they have nothing against him. They have nothing to charge him with. They asked him the same question 500 times and maybe 15 or 20 times. He made some slight variation in his answers. And so they're saying, okay, you perjured yourself because this answer contradicts that one. He's guilty of reaching out to Wikipedia and asking them what they had, what dirt they had on Hillary. So did the New York Times and the Washington Post, and probably you. I would have if I could have, if I knew how to get hold of Julian Assange, I would have reached out to him. I mean, everybody wanted to know what he had on everything. That's not a crime. And I'm no partisan of Roger Stone. I don't know him. I don't hold any brief for him. I like him because he's kind of a crazy old coot.
Well, you know what else, Bart? He made the Clinton machine mad because he alleges that Chelsea Clinton, that her real father is Webb Hubble, and he went and tried to get DNA from her at a book signing. He's toast.
Yeah, that's right. That's a secret you can't put out. Now they're going to be after us for talking about it.
Yeah, probably. So the Roger Stone, what do you think is going to, he's one of, I think now five Clinton confidants, advisors, whatever, that have been charged in this Mueller probe. Is that right? Five, but none of them really have to do with what the probe was actually intended for. Do I have that right?
I think that's right. All of Trump's confidants, all of his inner circle, they've come after. And it's funny. It's the same pattern. We keep talking about the Clinton machine, but this is also the Obama machine, the Obama and Valerie Jarrett machine.
You're right.
Because remember, they did the same thing with the federal government during the Obama administration. They came after all of their political opponents. Anybody that was effective was investigated by the IRS. And if they had any significant wealth, they faced inquiries by the SEC. If they owned a company, they had Department of Labor inquiries. Every possible means of governmental power was exercised to harass, intimidate, and bully all of Obama's political opponents. And it's what the Clintons and the Obamas have always done.
I sort of want to ask you what happens next, but none of us has a crystal ball. Will it go on forever? But what if you had to suppose, what would you say?
It will go on forever unless we start seeing subpoenas and prosecutions of some of the smaller fish in the empire. The empire will collapse of its own weight in a heartbeat if you start seeing people who commit crimes start to get prosecuted. I'd like to start with, what's her name? The registrar, the voter registrar in Broward County.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Her name, they were calling her Shady something on TV. It's not necessarily nice, but she, I know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote an article asking for a RICO suit to be launched against her because I know that I believe that she is at the center of voter fraud and of a conspiracy to defraud, to commit fraud during, to commit election fraud. I'd like to see a RICO suit launched there where they could get the DNC involved and get the campaigns involved and go after them, and not as a political vendetta, but as an attempt to stop criminal conspiracy, stop criminal activity. And all you have to do is stop the actual criminal activity, and I think that the empire then will fall.
The Broward County election supervisor, and she quit, then they said that they were going to let her go, and she went back. So it was just this whole thing. The midterms were a bit of a mess in Florida, and that's not the first time it's happened. Getting short on time, but wanted to ask you quickly, the kids over the weekend, the Covington Catholic kids with the MAGA hats and the elderly man who approached them and got in their faces. What did you think of that whole thing? Were you sort of amazed at how it all just boiled over and the whole mess on social media and the allegations and all that?
Some of my military friends at Opsilens call him Chief Never Been to Nam.
Right.
I thought that that young man, that Nicholas Sandman, handled himself beautifully. He was calm. He was quiet. He was respectful. Nathan Phillips came up and got in his face and tried to frighten him and provoke him, and he just stood silent and respectful, and he's been nothing but respectful ever since. I hope they sue the pants. His family sues the pants off the people who've attacked him.
A great last word. Bart Markoy, thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes.
Hey, anxiety disorders are the most common mental health issues in the United States of America, affecting 40 million adults in the U.S. alone, age 18 or older. Can you imagine? That doesn't it? The kids, a whole different show, right? We're joined with the author of The Link Is What You Think. There it is. And Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. Yes, it's all small stuff. Our friend of the show, Dr. Michael Mantel. Welcome back.
Good to be here again.
Good to have you here. This is so, we all have anxiety at times.
Right.
Type A, overachievers, you hear these sort of labels. But when do people know that it's sort of could end up, you could say crisis, I guess.
Right. We know that there are about, 40 million American adults who have anxiety disorder, the mental illness label anxiety disorder. Now, this idea came to me. I read an article in the New York Times recently about traffic and the amount
of... I saw you posted that. You've got to follow him on social media. You always post...
Definitely follow me.
...really great things.
Thank you.
And I saw that article, yeah.
And I thought, wow, anxiety is just taking over. You mentioned 8-10% of children have anxiety.
And that's a huge, 8-10% of children. That's huge.
It is.
For children who should be allowed to be children.
Right, but no more. And we'll talk about a little bit about that. The fact is that anxiety disorders range from panic and social anxiety and phobias and general anxiety all the way over to, I'm a little concerned about how I'm going to do when Amy interviews me today. I'm not going to avoid it. I'm a little concerned. That's healthy anxiety.
Healthy anxiety is good. It helps you get you prepped for something that might be a little special or that you need to sort of go the extra mile for, or just sort of be on for, I guess you could say.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're not going to sleep through this interview.
No.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to be up for it, but not to be so anxious that it cripples you.
It can impede how you perform if you're too anxious.
It does. And I believe it all comes back to the way you think. The link is what you think. I believe that that's where it all goes to. So, for example, let's say someone is going to give a speech, okay, and they have...
By the way, I've heard that more people are scared of public speaking than death.
You've heard Seinfeld.
Is that not right?
I think
just too much Seinfeld.
Right. So people would rather die than give a speech.
I've got more information from Seinfeld if you need.
I love that. Okay. Is it
anywhere close to being right?
I don't know the data, but let's assume it's close enough for government work. Okay. So
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Okay.
We could do a whole segment of Seinfeld. Forget anxiety.
Oh, everyone's getting it on the act. I'm so sorry.
Now, by the way, Seinfeld is now, you know, no good.
Because it's politically incorrect.
Politically incorrect. Yeah. It triggers anxiety when I watch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're talking about things that are just too uncomfortable for people.
Exactly. We'll talk about a little bit about that, too.
Okay.
But so some people have ego issues. In other words, I'm giving a speech and this is going to make me look bad. Some people have discomfort. I'm just afraid that I'm going to not feel good when I do this. And other people have the double whammy. I'm anxious that I'm going to be anxious. So they fall apart altogether. Yeah. The difficulty is these kinds of thoughts keep people from engaging in life. I have a slide that I want to show people, if I can, we can put it up. Is it healthy or unhealthy? Everyday anxiety. I'm embarrassed, I'm self-conscious in an uncomfortable, awkward situation, or I avoid social situations because I'm terrified of being judged, as if being judged is the worst imaginable thing in the world. I'm nervous before a test or a business presentation or a TV appearance. I have out-of-the-blue panic attacks and I'm preoccupied with fears of having another one. And another example, I have everyday worries about paying bills, a romantic breakup, or getting a job. Or I have constant unsubstantiated worry that causes significant distress and interferes with my life. Can you see the difference? It comes down to the following. An event happens. We hear noise. We tell ourselves, it's nothing, and we go on. Or we hear that noise and we tell ourselves, something terrible, awful, horrible is going to happen and I can't stand it. And we create anxiety. Nobody, but nobody, can have anxiety without two words. Going to.
Going to.
This is going to happen. Oh. I'm going to fail. He's going to hate me. They're going to reject me.
It's like that meme that says 99% of the thoughts we think over and over again are completely useless, not accurate.
Exactly. And that's probably very true. So what we have to do is...
And that's not from Seinfeld. That's something else.
And I didn't even quote Seinfeld. We're having a good time today. And so the point is, we have to then, to the activating event, my belief about the activating event, and then I have to challenge that. Question, dispute that belief. What else can I think? Let's put up some thoughts. And some other thoughts that you can think about.
Almost like you exercise a muscle to make yourself not think that.
That's a very,
very... Because you can be in control of it. It's like the link is what you think.
Tell yourself, I don't have to make myself anxious about anything or put myself down if I stupidly and foolishly do make myself anxious. Hey, anxiety is bad, but that doesn't make me bad. I can bear and bear with anxiety. It won't kill me. And this one I love. Comfort is nice, but it's not necessary. Anxiety and panic are burrs in my saddle. They're inconvenient. It's uncomfortable, but it's hardly awful.
So because we might face anxiety and panic, it probably keeps us from doing a lot of things that we might enjoy.
And therefore, my old professor and teacher, Albert Ellis, who wrote all about this, used to have people go onto the New York subway system and every stop call out the stop if they were terrified about how people would relate to them. Or he'd have them walk around Bloomingdale's.
Sounds fun.
We'd have them walk around Bloomingdale's on a Saturday afternoon in Manhattan and start screaming at the time every 15 minutes. They would overcome their anxiety. You have to think differently, act differently, and you feel different. That's the key.
You go through Bloomingdale's and you yell the time and the world does not end.
The world
and in New York City, it's a pretty normal occurrence, actually.
Probably true. But I think about this, that 40 million people suffer and many just don't get treatment. Only, I think, 35 or 38% of people who have this disorder go for treatment.
So more than a third of people who have an actual disorder surrounding anxiety don't get help at all.
Don't get help. And we're talking about the vast majority of people who have everyday concerns that we can think ourselves, talk ourselves out of. Mm-hmm. Something, and by the way, the key underneath all of this is the word must. I must be perfect in my presentation. They must approve of me. My life must never have danger. Look, I was raised by a mom who taught me don't go into the ocean. You're going to get hurt. Don't walk on the sand. You're going to cut yourself. To this day, I laugh when I go to the beach or go into the ocean and say to myself, I'm not going to get hurt. And even if I get hurt, it's not going to kill me. And as Albert Ellis used to say, if it kills you, you're dead. Don't worry about it.
Now, that does sound like it's from Seinfeld. Oh, my goodness. Talking to Dr. Michael Mantel, author of The Link is What You Think. We're going to hold you over for another segment. But where can we find you? I want to make sure people can follow you
follow
on social media.
Follow me on Facebook. My name, Michael Mantel, Dr. San Diego, or Fitness Psych on Twitter. Instagram, LinkedIn, I'm all over social media.
He is a well sought after cognitive behavioral transformation coach, and we're going to be back with Dr. Mantel right after this.
Much cholesterol in the blood causes plaque buildup in the arteries. Fiber has been scientifically proven to lower cholesterol. Created by Dr. J. Robert Cade, the inventor of Gatorade, Cholesterade promotes probiotic function, supports digestive health, contains all natural flavors, and is gluten-free. In the original case study, participants saw a reduction in bad cholesterol by more than 20%. Cholesterade is the ultimate all-natural digestive aid.
Happy to say welcome back to our America Trends audience on the YouTube America TV network and now in 175 countries on Biz Talk Radio. Welcome here with Dr. Michael Mantel, author of The Link is What You Think. Also, the classic Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, P.S. It's All Small Stuff, and your other book.
I've written a book on violence in the workplace.
That's so
ticking bombs. Diffusing violence in the workplace.
Boy, that's a good one to have ahead of time.
Yeah.
Not after,
right.
Oh, boy. So we were talking about anxiety. You know, it all ties into perfectionism and these things that we just need to leave behind to try to, this quote I laugh at all the time, but live your best life. But it's
right.
So true.
Anxiety is about predictions. Depression is about loss. And anger rests on the belief that someone violated my rights and they shouldn't. And so we look at these basic emotions and we think, what am I thinking that's making me feel this way? If people will just remember that, what am I thinking that's making me feel this way? Plug into that thought, I'm predicting something that I'm afraid is going to happen. What if it, first of all, I don't know if it's going to happen. Secondly, what if it does happen? Is it the worst thing in the world? Or is it just something I don't like?
Then tell yourself this, I don't have to make myself anxious. We really can control our thoughts. And like I said, use that muscle to try to redirect, right?
Yeah, I don't always have to feel comfortable. And it isn't awful when I don't. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
So that's what we want people to be doing.
There's this long phrase, you may have never heard of it, but it says, no one's perfect, so don't try to be. And who can even assess what perfect is? So just chill out already.
There is
we
no
have
perfect.
To, and we have to tell ourselves this every
we
time.
We have to accept the fact that we're human with foibles and flaws. Mm-hmm. And if we can have unconditional self-acceptance, which I probably talk about more in this program every week, unconditional self-acceptance. Accept the fact that you have human fallibilities. Mm-hmm. We all do.
Yeah. Well, that's you've absolutely said it. And we have another important topic we're talking about, and this is just... If you go on Twitter anywhere, boy, it was over the weekend. I said, this is boiling over so much. I don't even know what's going to happen. And that's the story of the Covington Catholic kids. Some kids went to a march. They were waiting for their bus to leave. And yeah, they were wearing MAGA hats. So that is the prescription so many times for people to be targeted, which is just sad. And apparently a man who appeared to be a Native American tribal elder sort of got in their faces and started playing a drum. And first, the video sort of showed one thing at first, and then people jumped to a conclusion, started calling for the kids to be thrown out of school, to be assaulted. Some even called for their death. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, what are we living in? What times? And so pretty soon, the extended video appeared. And you have people like networks, like CNN even, saying, boy, we're sorry we said this because it's not what it appears at all. And this man who everyone said, this poor Vietnam veteran, and it turns out he was a refrigerator mechanic during Vietnam. He never went there.
Right.
Reportedly went AWOL two or three times. I don't even want to say that because you hate to report something
right.
derogatory because so many people are jumping to conclusions about stupid stuff with the story. And I don't know why, and this is why I want to ask you, all of us seem to think that we have to sound off on Twitter about this, and everyone is so angry.
So it's not so much that we have to, but that we can. Hmm. Mob mentality.
Mob mentality.
Let me put that slide up real quickly. I want to show people this is what mob or herd mentality is about. Three legs of a tripod, the size of the group, what we can put on Twitter is millions of people. It creates emotional excitement, and we lose this sense of ourself that gives us this sort of permission to engage in dangerous behavior, violent behavior, riots, or whatever it might be. Second, anonymity. It leads people to experience fewer social inhibitions. I can be anonymous in this big group, and no one's going to blame me. And diffusion of responsibility. Everyone's doing it. I'm not responsible. Those three things. Give me a group, let me be anonymous, and diffuse responsibility. And boy, I can do anything I want. That's the psychology of what we see herds and mobs doing what they're doing today. The fact is, sporting events, internet, you mentioned before cognitive bias. We have this belief that I'm right. I want to tell you about an interesting study. University of Leeds, a number of years ago, they had a massive group of college students. They said, just walk around randomly. They pulled 5% of that group over and said, walk specifically here. In no time, everybody started following that small little group. That's mob mentality.
Isn't that funny?
They just do it. So this young man with the Make America Great hat, mm-hmm. Make America Great Again hat, mm-hmm. if he was walking down the street alone, I doubt that anyone would start attacking him or start, you know, calling him names or whatever. But put that group around him. And you said something before. This fellow has stolen valor. I don't know if it's much lower.
Nathan Phillips, the man who got in his face. And it looked like, well, at first it looked like that they were making fun of the Native Americans who were doing this routine. And when really they approached them, got right in his face and wouldn't stop. And the kids are just trying to sort of not do anything at first. And so, and as you talk about cognitive bias or confirmation bias, what you saw depends on, well, let's face it, if you like Trump or not. And as Joy Behar said, why do we jump to these conclusions? Because we want Trump out. She actually said that on her show, The View. So the people who don't like Trump saw the hats and immediately associated those kids with doing something evil. And this Nathan Phillips, who apparently, if he actually said he came back from Vietnam.
Right.
He actually said that. So stolen valor, I guess so. And furthermore, he was AWOL. There's also a report that he's been a payee for the Democratic arm to go out and do aggressive
right.
things like this.
Right. You know, and there's I read earlier today that there's some prison time he may have served or something. Who knows what's going on, what truth is anymore.
But don't dox him. Don't get online and sound off about it if you don't know, either, no matter what side you're on, right?
And now they're blaming this kid for having a PR agency behind him that his parents hired and that his apology wasn't sincere. But, you know, we can blame forever. It's not going to solve anything.
Mm-mm.
And I think that the mobs that we have today, whether it's a mob in Congress or a mob on the internet or a mob in journalism, we are all suffering.
We need to be better. We need to be better than this because we're all broadcasters now. Dr. Michael Mantel, can't thank you enough. The link is What You Think. Thank you for being with us this hour on America Trends. I'm your host, Amy Fuller. I want to thank the people who helped make it go round, Sully Sullivan, Chris Janikas, Jared Coleman, and Curtis Matovich, and many more. Yeah, a lot of applause there from the Peanut Gallery. And thank you to our guests for being here. Thank you. And be sure you follow us on U2America.com. Click through and find us on social media. We would love to all be friends. Finally, tonight, we are going to go ahead and celebrate the trending Gladys Knight, an American treasure, making headlines as she has agreed to sing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. Knight says she wants to play a part in uniting our country. We're going to take it back now to the 70s with one of the greatest hits by Gladys Knight and the Pips as we say goodnight from America Trends.
He's leaving the light. He's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. What's left of his world? The world he left behind. Not so long. Said he's going back,
going back
to a simpler place and time.
Back.
Oh, you see him
right by
side. Now be with him.
I know you will.
Oh, let midnight train to Georgia.
Leaving on a midnight train.
Yeah. Oh,
oh, oh.
I'd rather live in his world than live without him. But he sure found out the hard way that dreams don't always come true. Oh no. So he found all his hopes and he even sold his old car. Got a one-way ticket back to the life he once knew. Oh yes he did. He said he would. Oh, no, he's leaving.
Leaving.
On that midnight train to Georgia.
On the midnight train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Said he's going back to find.
Going
ooh.
Back to find.
A simpler place and time.
That
oh.
Yes, gonna be
yeah. Now gonna be with him.
I know you will.
On that midnight train to
he's
Georgia. I'd rather live in his world than live without him in mine. Oh, he's leaving.
Leaving
on the midnight train to Georgia.
Leaving on the midnight train.
Yeah. Ooh, y'all. Said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, a simpler place.